Well, I always like to start off the program with a familiar voice. Sarah Isley-Durley is with us from the Connecticut Data Collaborative. They've got a big conference, their annual conference coming up. We're going to be talking all about that and why it may be important or more important than ever for you to consider being part of it. But first, let's get caught up a little bit. Sarah, good morning. We joked a little bit before we turned on the microphone about not only how open-ended things seem to be, but also the fact that we're recording this interview almost 2 weeks before we air it. So it's really kind of impossible to drill into things that are happening here in the last few days of October, because we could have a whole brave new world happening by the time this airs. But one thing is for certain in regards to data and why we are so grateful that you and your team exists here for us in Connecticut. So with that in mind, give us a couple of minutes background just to orient or reorient our listeners about ctdata.org.
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much again for the opportunity to be here. CT Data is a nonprofit organization. We're based in Hartford, but we serve the state. Our mission is to support informed decision making by providing access to data and also by training people how to use the data in order to make good decisions. We do that in a number of ways. We have raw data on our website for those out there who are really comfortable with data and like to download files and manipulate them. We also have analysis of data. So if there's a new data set that comes out, you know, an American Community Survey that comes out, we recently did an analysis with some of the ICE data about the number of people who have been apprehended in Connecticut. We provide analysis of that for people who are maybe less comfortable downloading the data, but still need to know information to make decisions. And then we also provide the training and how to do that. That could be an individual level through our Connecticut Data Academy, or also through something more rigorous at an organizational level called data strategic planning, where we help organizations explore the data that they have available, the questions they really need to answer, and create an infrastructure to be able to actually have the data to make informed decisions. And all of that actually really relates to our conversation today about our conference this December.
Well, for, I mean, virtually everyone is touched by either data itself or themselves. Mm-hmm. Their life in some way is steered, directed, or impacted by data being crunched and utilized by outside entities, from fast food restaurants and retail stores to the medical care they get and everything in between, especially our municipalities as well. For folks who are afraid of data a little bit. As children they were scared horribly by an Excel spreadsheet like me and just could never imagine going back and tackling it. Can you just talk about a couple of the ways that CT Data helps make uninducted individuals and those who never thought they'd want to be working with data or engaging with an organization like yours, how do you make it easier and better for them to get their feet wet?
The way that I like to explain that is actually starting with myself and talking about the fact that I am not your typical data person, nor are most of the people on our staff, actually. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a musician. Actually, at the time, New Kids on the Block was really big when I was in elementary school, and I wanted to be in a band like New Kids on the Block. And actually, my whole life was music. All of high school, I did music. I wanted to be a concert pianist when I, go to college for music and become a concert pianist. I didn't go to college. I minored in music. I didn't major in music. But my degree was a liberal arts degree that actually taught me to be curious and encouraged me to ask questions. So I do encourage people, like, if you are curious, if you like to ask questions, data is just a way to find information to answer your questions. And obviously, there are very complex ways that you can answer questions. You know, think about a peer-reviewed research article, you know, by a PhD. But they're also more less labor-intensive ways that we can use data. And again, that's why we do provide some of the analysis on our website. But we like to make sure that our workshops are really accessible for people who have backgrounds, you know, kind of similar to mine, who don't think they are data people, who may be afraid of numbers or afraid of math, and actually see how empowering it can be to learn how to use data. And obviously, data are not just numbers, but it's also words. People can analyze words. You know, if you're a person who likes words and likes reading and analyzing what people say, qualitative data may be your entry point. So everyone has the ability inside of them to be a data person. And we do seek to make sure that in our events and in our workshops that people really are able to see themselves and feel empowered and not discouraged.
Very good. Last time we talked, just shortly after the new administration entered Washington, D.C., we started talking a little bit about concerns for folks like you and your team going to reliable sources of information at the federal level, and in some cases finding a dead page or a temporary blockage. How has the government shutdown or had the government shutdown, if we are in fact past it by the time we hear this, what impact did that have on your ability to keep as good a continuum of and flow of information that you need going?
Yeah, there are some federal data sources that are down. There's a message on the website. The bigger impact, honestly, is in the data collection, that even if the government is open again when this airs, there has been a time period where the federal government is not collecting data. And it actually does have a trickle-down effect to the state. For example, on October 20th, we got an email from the Department of Labor, you know, kind of a newsletter saying that they're not able to provide the monthly job numbers because it relies on a partnership with a current population survey. And with staff not being in the office, we actually will not have job numbers for Connecticut for, I don't know if it's the month of September or October. So we're not going to have job numbers as a result of this decision. And it's at the state level. It's not at the federal level, at the state level. And so some of our, even our state level data is at risk if there are decisions made at the federal level to change services. Much of the data that we think about at the state level is through data.ct.gov, which is mostly administrative data. It's provided through the provision of services. So someone applies for SNAP and goes and receives SNAP benefits, and then that's counted. And you can see changes over time in that number. But if we're not able to have the funding to provide those services, there's a gap. And then we're not really sure how long it's going to take to get some things back up and running. The American Community Survey has not been administered during this month, which the American Community Survey relies on data collection every single month. So it's it's not something that can't be overcome. You know, during COVID in 2020, there were problems with the data, and you kind of just have to do what you have to do and you adjust. But that's the risk of the longer that the government is shut down. Not only is it obviously horrible for people not receiving benefits or for people who are not getting paid, federal workers, but it also does potentially have a longer term effect on the quality of the data that we're able to access.
Yeah, and that's something I recall we did start talking about between January and when the government shutdown took effect. You had indicated in that earlier conversation this year that you guys were going to be paying very close attention to any alterations in both the scope and volume of data that you had previously been getting from either a direct government sources or agencies that may be impacted by government wherewithal or spending. What have you found since earlier this year in terms of the scope and volume of the data that you depend on to try to make your information for those that are using ctdata.org most robust?
The data that we access regularly is American Community Survey data. We use a lot of different sources, but that's really the most common one. And so far, there haven't been changes to that. However, in August, the administration announced that they actually wanted to do an interim decennial census and to change who is counted in the country. And that, we're concerned, is going to cause major problems with the decennial census. People responding to the decennial census requires that people actually trust that their information will be kept private, that it won't be misused. It has been misused a few times in the past, so those fears are unfortunately warranted. And statements that the counting will be changed, it will exclude certain people, is only further eroding trust in the census. And so we actually have more concern at the moment about the decennial census, which takes 10 years to prepare for. People have been preparing for it for the last 5 years. And so that's really the big change that we're looking to next. But also there have been requests from the administration for states to reconfigure their population estimates, removing certain people, and that only when those population estimates have been certified will they allow FEMA to provide emergency recovery funding to those states. So while our products are not necessarily affected, there have been changes that actually could have a detrimental effect on the residents of Connecticut who pay, you know, taxes to the federal government. And we trust that we will receive the benefits that that we pay for. But with actually some of these changes in the data, there may be less. We may actually not have access to those services we're entitled to because of the data changes that are being made.
Okay. Well, in the last 6 or 7 minutes that we have with you, we want to bring more people to your upcoming annual conference. You've got room for a little over 250 Connecticut Data Heroes to come together up there in Hartford. It's happening on December 3rd. Why don't you give us a quick walkthrough of a few of the things that folks would need to know about why they should consider attending this data conference and some of the things they'll learn when they go there.
Well, I'm really excited about the conference. Our theme this year is Data for Democracy. And I understand that the word democracy can be a little touchy for people and signify different things. So what we really mean is that democracy is something where we, the people, are able to impact decisions that affect us. We have a say in the decisions that affect us. And the federal government providing funding to collect data that can show us how well they're doing is pretty revolutionary. We can hold them accountable, like they're paying for us to hold them accountable, in essence. But that data also allows us to improve our communities. You know, we live in our neighborhoods, we see our neighbors, we see the challenges that folks are facing. But when we don't have access to data, it actually impedes our ability to really effectively engage in our community and be civically involved in a way that's effective and helpful. So what we're doing is we're bringing people together who care about this, people who care about their communities, who care about supporting their communities in evidence-based ways, you know, wanting to really solve problems, not just throw resources and money and hope that something sticks. Like, that's gambling. We don't want to do that. We want to actually identify real problems and identify real solutions. So what we're hoping for the conference is that the people who are there are people who are kind of raising their hands and saying, I want to be part of the solution. While it's challenging, all of these changes at the federal level, there are things that we can do at the state. There are things like Food Share, for example, recently kind of stepped up and said, the federal government is not going to collect certain data about food insecurity. We are positioned to fill that gap. And that's what we're looking for. So even in our communities, as a nonprofit, we can conduct surveys and really careful and ethical ways to better learn about what's happening in our own community and bring other nonprofits together with us to say, let's solve these problems together. So that's what we're doing. We're bringing people together. We're not just going to talk about what's not working. We're actually hoping to become inspired by what folks are doing at the local level and that we can all leave better equipped to be able to address the challenges that we face, that in some ways feel more more important than ever in some of the things that we're working on.
It's serendipitous that although you started planning for this conference many, many months ago, that you have really kind of skated to where the puck is going to be by welcoming Dr. Ismar Volish. He's going to be talking in part about issues involving electoral maps, which is smack dab all over the headlines over the past few months. And it seems to be getting more intense and more frequently talked about by the day.
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting about this is when you read his book or hear him speak is we make decisions about how we count our elections. And some states are, you know, we kind of think, whoa, these states are wild that are trying ranked choice voting or things like that. And we do have this emotional attachment to thinking the way we do this is correct and right. But what he talks about is actually any counting, any way we tabulate our votes is simply a mathematical decision, and that we should understand what those decisions mean. Different outcomes result from different math. It's just math, you know? And so I'm really excited to have him help us kind of break down something that can be very emotional and to kind of see that actually this is simply a problem that we can look at together and solve by making decisions, trade-offs together. And so not only can we do that with our elections, but we also can do that with other things in our community. I think it's a chance for us to acknowledge that we all care about our communities and we all want what's best for the people in our communities, for our neighbors, for our state, and that we can be part of the solution in helping our state and our communities be healthy and help all people to flourish.
Well, certainly people can go to ctdata.org/conference2025 to begin to explore all of the workshops and sessions that you're planning for the upcoming conference. But in the last 30 seconds or so, if you could just remind people of the where's and the when's and all the other key information, we'll say farewell to you for now.
All right. So on December 3rd at the Hartford Marriott downtown at 9 o'clock, we are starting our program for our annual conference. And we're going to have, you'll have the opportunity to attend 4 different sessions. We'll have really facilitated groups at lunchtime so you can get to know other people if you'd really like to. At 4 p.m., we're going to wrap up and we're going to head into a reception where you can really get to know other people. You can talk about ideas. You can just kind of, let your brain relax a little bit after a day of a lot of information, a lot of good connections. And you can sign up again on our website, ctdata.org. And anywhere you go, you'll find the link on our top of our page to register for our conference.
The Connecticut Data Collaborative seeks to connect people like you with data that'll help you make informed decisions. They want to engage the people most affected by the decisions and the data exploration whenever possible as well. And we urge you to get to know this organization and consider attending their upcoming conference. ctdata.org is their website. And my guest, as always, has been their worthy representative, Sarah Isley Dearly. Thank you, Sarah, for your time this morning, and best of luck with the conference.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.